You're listening to the podcast, So You Want to Be a Writer, with Valerie Koo and Allison Tate. Valerie is an author, journalist, and national director of the Australian Writers' Centre, which is one of the world's leading providers of online and classroom courses for people who want to get published and write with confidence.
Allison Tate is a freelance writer, blogger, and author of the best-selling series, The Mapmaker Chronicles. She has more than 20 years professional writing experience.
Each week they explore the world of writing, publishing and blogging to bring you news and opportunities, advice on how to succeed in the world of writing, interviews with top writers and much more. With students enrolling from all over the world, you can find out more about the Australian Writers' Centre at writerscentre.com.au.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 225 of So You Want to Be a Writer. My name's Valerie Koo and I'm here with Allison Tate. How are you, Al?
I'm okay, thanks, Val. It's raining, which I'm always quite happy about, particularly because it's been so dry and my garden has just leapt back to life. So I'm wrapped. Pup, not so wrapped because, of course, his walks are a little bit less kind of regular than they were. But anyway, he's coping and we're coping and it's all good. No, I'm fine. And you, how are you?
I'm good. Do you have bougainvillea?
No, I don't have it. My neighbours have it and it's just currently creeping across their fence and up through my camellia. So we're going to go and have to have a little chat about it.
Oh, you mean it's actually like trying to mate with your camellia or something?
No, it's not mating. That would be awkward. No. Because it's very vigorous, shall we say, the bougainvillea, and so vigorous in its mating. And so it can take over very, very quickly, and it's kind of jumping the fence and growing through my enormous camellia, so I have to go and have a chat with him about cutting it back.
Oh, my God, okay. All right, well, you can't answer my bougainvillea question, so it doesn't matter. Anyway.
Why do you have a bougainvillea question? Is yours not vigorous?
No, well, it has its moments, but I want it to be extremely vigorous, and it's not. It's just sort of fair to middling.
Fair to middling. Well, you know, as I've said to you, sometimes, you know, we all have fair to middling times, and that's not such a bad thing. Pretty much everything's been fairly fair to middling over the last couple of months because of the weather.
Like right.
It's been hot and there hasn't been much rain. So even your bougainvillea, which generally speaking does thrive in a drier condition, is probably struggling a little bit because of that.
All right. Now, new listeners might think you're listening to So You Want to Be a Gardener, but you're not. You're listening to So You Want to Be a Writer. And we want to give a big shout out, firstly, to Tamsin Janu, who is a graduate of the Australian Writers' Centre. And recently she was longlisted not once, but two times for the CBCA longlist, for the CBCA Awards. And that's so exciting for her Figgy series, Figgy and the President, Figgy and the World and all of those. And when Tamsin did the course, she did writing books for children and young adults. It was on the second day of her course that she mapped out the story that became her first novel. And I'm pretty sure she liked the course because she told her mum. And her mum then did the course, Penelope Janu, and released her book as well and has recently won the XO Romance Prize for her unpublished manuscript On the Same Page. So her first novel was In the Deep End, and she wins $5,000 now for the and a publishing contract for her unpublished manuscript. So keeping it all in the family, pretty exciting.
And well done.
Just big claps for both of those AWC.
Go brands. Team Janu, that's all I can say.
Absolutely. Speaking also, you mentioned Procrasty Pup. Now, Procrasty Pup and Dougal and Groucho are official AWC mascots. And I have to say, since last week in our newsletter where we were celebrating all of the doggy muses in our lives, we have been inundated.
I'm not surprised. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting.
With photos of all of the cute little doggies in our community with the hashtag writer's dog. And we just want to say thank you. Keep it going because we love seeing their little faces. It's so cute.
Well, I just think that this supports my theory because remember a couple of years ago I tried to make this a thing and nobody would get on board with me. But remember I wanted to do – hashtag writers with dogs, because everywhere I looked, there were all these memes and there was all this stuff about writers and cats. And, you know, I know you've got a cat as well, so I won't discuss my true feelings for the cat right here. But, you know, all I'm saying is that dogs can be very, very useful to writers, because not only are they cute and, you know, very, very supportive with their unconditional love, but they are excellent to walk with. And as you know, the walking for me is a very important part of the writing process. So I'd say we celebrate, yes. I'm finally really happy to see the rest of the world catching up with me, Valerie, even if I did mean I had to get you on board to bring everyone with me. See, we are nothing if we are not together, Val. What could I say?
Walking to you is what having a shower is for me, but I don't think we should be doing writers in showers.
Oh, heavens, no. We shouldn't. And I would also like it known that I do shower as well as walk, because otherwise that would be a little bit awkward as well. That would be writers with social issues.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Let us move on to the world of writing and publishing this week. Oh, actually, before we move on, Brisbane, it's official. You can now book into courses at the Australian Writers' Centre. The first two cabs off the rank, and we've already received enrolments, even though we haven't announced it officially, are Writing Picture Books with Zanny Louise and Creative Writing Stage 1 with Angela Slatter. So, check it out at writerscentre.com.au. Can't wait to do more in Brisbane. All right, so back to the world of writing and publishing. We have a post from the very clever Claire Scobie, who is a presenter at the Australian Writers' Centre, and it's called 10 Ways to Become a More Productive Writer. I like this because we all want to be more productive, don't we?
We do, always.
And before we even look at some of Claire's tips, what would you say is your number one productivity tip?
Oh, my number one. Well, I have so many. Honestly, okay, I've got two major ones, okay, and they're probably actually related to each other. The first one is showing up, even if you're not feeling inspired.
Oh, yeah.
And the second one is, again, it's probably the same thing, discipline. Is just having that, is just sitting, it's the same thing. Sitting at your computer or getting out your notebook, even if you feel like the muse has deserted you for, you know, tropical island somewhere and is sipping martinis or whatever they sip these days, you need to turn up and get started. And she will at some point remember that she has a job and will come along as well. But if you don't write when you don't feel like it, then you don't. You kind of just get out of the habit of writing at all, I think. That's my theory.
Definitely.
So I reckon discipline, showing up, is the most important thing. And it's so unsexy, and I've written an entire blog post about this, about how deeply unsexy it really is. But you know what? It's still – it's what gets stuff done. The unsexy stuff is what gets stuff done.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
absolutely.
What's yours?
I would say my number one productivity tip in terms of writing is a deadline. And obviously if it's a real deadline, that's extremely motivating, like you've promised something to someone, like a publisher. But if you're not at that stage where you've promised something to a publisher, you can potentially, because one of our interviewees in the past, she said she promised a friend to send her a chapter a week, and that really got her book written. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't going to be some terrible consequence, of course, but at least there was some level of accountability. And if you don't want to send it to a friend – you could say, because what a friend has done to me, she said, I'm going to send you this as a form of accountability, but I want you not to read it. And I didn't. Mm. But you know, the fact that she said that she would send it to me made her do it.
Well, you're not even tempted to peek
a little bit? No.
You're too busy to peek. You'd have to schedule in a peek, wouldn't you? Like you'd have to be like, well, I've got to allocate 5 minutes there for that peek. Do you know what I have to say though? And this is a very clever idea, and it's one that I hadn't thought of. Just going back to Claire Scobie's post at ClaireScobie.com, which is 10 ways to become a productive writer. Create 2 logins. And this is something I've not thought of. I like it though. She has 2 separate logins for her laptop. One that is only for writing and music and the other one for everything else. And it's boosted her productivity exponentially, she says, because she logs into AuthorClear and she's that's all that is in that login is her work stuff, is her writing stuff. So there's no there's not the thousand million distractions. Like I'm looking at my desktop as we speak here and it's just utter chaos, as I'm sure you would all probably imagine, with so much stuff going on. I've got family stuff. I've got, you know, Book Boys music stuff. I've got, you know, we're planning a holiday. I've got holiday stuff. I've got that much gear going on here. So I think I really like that idea. And she even says that she shared it when she went to a recent writers' festival in India and the newspaper picked up on it and wrote a piece about it.
Great.
I like it a lot.
That is a very clever idea. I don't think I could cope, but if you have the because I would be so wanting just to check that whatever, that would be on my other login. But if you can be disciplined enough, then I think that is definitely a great idea. She's
would you
also
just be
said
logging out and logging in just to double check, do you?
I would. Or I'd be checking on my phone or something instead. So one of the other things that's related that Claire says is to create different spaces. So, you know, find the right cafe or go to the library. So Claire says she has her own her writing-only cafes, which means her brain knows when she's in that cafe she's just meant to write, whereas maybe you have other cafes that, you know, you socialise or you talk to people or whatever. But I think that that's not a bad idea as well. Pretty much for me, when I go to a cafe, it is my writing time. I don't really talk to people. It's really strange because when I moved to the suburb I'm in now, everyone's really friendly. And people talk to each other in cafes, and it was the biggest shock of my life.
When I can just see you sitting at a table going, why are you speaking to me?
I know, when complete strangers would start chatting with me in cafes. And now I think it's lovely and very friendly, and it's a great atmosphere. But before, you know, my cafe time was my writing time, and now I have to kind of get the just sort of be a bit more open to it. Or maybe I kind of I if I really want my writing time, my trick. So I do this at the cafe down the road, who are all very friendly. My trick is to put my earphones in.
Okay.
And a frown on my face. So
I just
like
stay home.
Busy.
Why would you not just stay home where
there's
no
food
one
in the house? I need to eat.
Oh, see, I have a well-stocked – I have teenage boys. I have a well-stocked pantry, so I'm good. I could probably survive the siege at the moment with what's in my pantry, so I'm good to go. But I find it fascinating too, because remember we spoke to Jacqueline Moriarty a few episodes ago, and she was talking about the fact that she wrote every chapter of her latest book, which is called The Inconvenient Adventures of Bronte Metalstone or similar. She wrote every chapter in a different cafe and she was off, you know, searching, but she ended up going back to one every time because she liked the chocolates. Well, she's also been long-listed for a CBCA Book of the Year award, so it obviously works. You know, maybe we need to I need to give it a whirl. Clearly I need to give it a whirl.
Yeah, anyway. Give it a go. Why not? I mean, you're a cafe writing in – well, you're a cafe person. You go to cafes.
I don't write in cafes. We've talked about this before.
But you go in the morning forgotten this to get about your coffee. That's true.
I walk my dog. It's part of my morning ritual. I walk the dog to the cafe, have my coffee, have my five-minute chat or whatever it is with my friends that I know down there, walk home, and then I'm in the zone. I can't write in cafes. I get too distracted.
By what?
I'm chatting. I'm sitting next to you.
Oh, you're one of those people.
I'm one of them. I am. What are you doing? How interesting. What fascinating. You're a writer. How amazing. Oh. I'm that. So I can't possibly sit in cafes and be that. So I have to stay home.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to have a look at the post, it will be in the show notes, which you can find at soyouwanttobeawriter.com.au. The next post that we have for you is from Jane Friedman's awesome blog, and it's called Three Principles of a Successful Freelance Career. I like this. And one of the things that Jane says is to narrow your focus. And I think that this is a really good one because I know that there are a lot of people who say, oh, I just want to write about anything, which is fine. I do enjoy the fact that, you know, I can have variety in my writing. But while I kind of approach it as be open to writing about anything, but focus on getting a particular niche. So because then, because when you focus on getting a particular niche, you're more likely to get published in particularly in that niche. But by the same token, you can still stay open to other types of writing if they come your way or fall in your lap, which surprisingly they do, even if you are focusing on a particular niche. So I think that that's good because it gets you much more familiar with that niche, gets you to be an expert in what's going on in that niche, and therefore you have you've got your finger on the pulse to know when there's a good story idea or when to pitch something to a particular editor because it's topical. So I think that that is a very good tip.
Yes.
What would your tips be for a successful freelance career?
Well, I particularly actually like Jane's second tip here. Is it Jane's post or a guest post? I can't even remember. There you go. Amanda Lehman from The New Freelance. I like Be a Fairy Godmother, and this is actually something that I actually really champion this across all aspects of writing, because I think that there's this notion somehow that, you know, people believe that there's only a certain number of opportunities out there and you must hoard all these opportunities for yourself and you must never, you know, give anyone else a leg up. And if you do that, then, you know, you're going to in some way diminish your star, or I don't know what they're thinking. But I actually think that sharing the love and sharing the karma is a really, really good thing to do. So if a job comes along and you can't do it, think of someone who might be able to and put their name forward. You know, give the job, get, if you, it, particularly if it's not something that you're confident with or it's not something that you can fit in, be like, you know what, I can't do this, but how about you, you know, try so-and-so, she'd be great at that or he'd be great at that or whatever. Let other people know if you see, and I see the Australian Writers' Centre graduates in the Facebook groups doing this all the time. They will share an opportunity. They will say, so-and-so is looking for freelancers or such and such. And I think that those kinds of things are really, really important to do, because I just think it's as much about networking as it is about sharing the karmic love. You know what I mean? It's like it's Amanda says this in her article. Both freelance writing and fiction writing, the industries are very small, particularly in Australia. Yes. Probably in the States, the United States, which is where this is written, as well. You know, we're talking percentage-wise here. They're very small. Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where you just want to You know, the colleague you ignore today, maybe the editor of the magazine you're dying to write tomorrow. And it's really important to kind of remember that. And I think when you're writing fiction, it's, you know, it costs you absolutely not one thing to retweet somebody else's book launch or to support them in some other way, to have them on your blog, to write a guest post for their blog. It costs you nothing. And that sort of like, it's that whole rising tide lifts all boats thing, you know, like more aware that readers are of, you know, the great things that are happening in Australian fiction or US fiction or whatever country fiction you're from, the better, because, you know, then there's more opportunities for them to discover, you know, your books, your friends' books, everybody else's books. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're all trying to do, isn't it? To encourage readers to read more books. So I like the fairy godmother principle.
That's definitely a good one. I agree 100%. And it's obviously not only in the world of fiction, it's definitely in the world of freelance writing. I remember when I first started out in freelance writing, I had a bunch of freelance writing friends and we all just shared opportunities with each other except for one person who who thought it was terrible if we even wrote about the same topic, and she never shared any opportunities. And all I can say now is the rest of us are still writing and she's not even a writer anymore. Or even close. Yes, her career just petered out. It sputtered to an end. And I believe that that is one of the reasons. And even, definitely. Just if you are generous, you will get generosity back to you. Maybe not necessarily even from the exact same people, but it's just something, what goes around comes around. I truly believe that.
I do too.
All right. Just a big shout out to say thank you to all of the entrants who entered the Furious Fiction Weekend competition. Ooh. So that is closed now for March, but there will be a new one on the first Friday in April. Now, the March Furious Fiction had a music theme, So, you know, there are some words that you need to include in your Furious Fiction. And for those of you who don't know, make sure you check out furiousfiction.com. And this is a short story that you the details are released at 5 p.m. on the first Friday of every month. You have 55 hours to submit your story, and the winner wins $500. So it had a music theme because on the 1st of March, which was the day it went live, that was John Bon Jovi's birthday.
It was the 2nd of March, wasn't it?
Sorry, the 2nd of March.
You would have peeked early and sent your birthday card early. Right. Happy birthday, John Bon Jovi.
Happy birthday, John Bon Jovi, yes. But that's not the only thing that you can win.
Okay.
This week's competition, this is really cool. So thanks to Dendy Direct, we have 10 lots of $20 vouchers to give away to use to stream their great range of new release films such as Loving Vincent, you know that one about Van Gogh and it was all coloured, the frames are all coloured in, Murder on the Orient Express. How cool is that? And The Killing of a Sacred Deer. So TV shows and films start as little as 99 cents with a bunch of curated collections, so you'll find plenty to keep you entertained. So to win one of these 10 vouchers, all you need to go to writercentre.com.au/win. Entries close on the 12th of March. This is really cool because I have yet to see Murder on the Orient Express and I really want to see it, and now I can watch it from home. Using the streaming service. That's cool. Okay. So writercentre.com.au/win. Now, Al.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Are you ready for the word of the week?
I have never been more ready, Val, ever.
Well, this is absolutely 100% true because regular listeners will know that I was in Queensland recently and I went to see Aladdin. So Aladdin is at the Queensland Performing Arts Centre, otherwise known as QPAC. And, of course, I had to go to the loo, right?
Oh, where are you going? Like, seriously, this whole entire podcast, we have just been – we've been vigorous. We've been in the shower. Now we're going to the loo.
We're going to the loo.
What are people going to think of us?
Because the word of the week comes from the back of the toilet door. Literally, I have a photo of it. I know some people think that's gross, but I have a photo of the back of the toilet door and I'm going to post it in the show notes, which you can find at soyouwanttobeawriter.com.au. Now, this image in the ladies' loo is real on the back of the toilet door at QPAC, and at the back of each door I presume in the men's as well, but I only know the ladies. Each door explains the meaning behind a theatrical word. So on my door, it explained supernumerary. Do you know what supernumerary is?
No, I don't think I do.
I'm going to tell you. It is an actor with a non-speaking role employed, for example, to swell a crowd scene, also known as an extra, particularly in film and television. Supernumerary.
There you go. I've always wanted to be a supernumerary. You know, yes. Third tree, spear carrier on the right, something like that. Like, I just feel like that could just be my role in life right there.
I was a supernumerary once. Oh, no, was it?
What for?
I was in an ad for a bank. We had to play backyard cricket on Cronulla Beach. And I was also in this wasn't an extra. This was like a supporting role or something. It was a show on the ABC called Fireflies with Jeremy Sims. So I had a scene with Jeremy Sims and someone else, I can't remember. And it was just, saying some stuff in that scene.
You had lines.
Yeah, so that wasn't an extra.
That's
that
not
was a
supernumerary.
Role.
That's an actual gig. How did you end up with the lines with Jeremy C? How old were you?
It was quite recent.
I'm squeaking. Quite recent?
Well, not recent. Whenever Fireflies was on, that was probably
a while ago. I don't know when Fireflies was on.
Yeah, I missed it on TV.
How did you end up in that?
I don't even know. Like, these things just happen and...
it's like your art career just happened. You are a multi-talented woman, Valerie Koo. What can I say?
Well, I didn't exactly go on to win an Oscar or anything, but anyway. Anyway, that was the word of the week, supernumerary. Who is Alison, our writer in residence this week?
Sorry, I'm still struggling with the notion of you as a support, as your best actor in a support role.
It's such a long story that I know. You under.
Okay, you can share it with me over a glass of wine one day, and I'll tell everyone else. Okay, so speaking of telling everyone else, our interview this week is with the fabulous Joel Naum from Critical Mass Consulting. Now, the reason that we're doing this interview is because a couple of weeks ago there was a bit of a discussion in the writer in the podcast community in So You Want to Be a Writer podcast Facebook group, which is a very long and involved name, about self-publishing and what, you know, whether it was different in Australia to what it was in the US and what the situation was and the ins and outs of it all. And I thought that the probably easiest way for us to respond to that and to answer those questions was to go to someone who knows about this stuff. And Joel immediately came to mind for various reasons, which will be outlined in the interview as part of the intro. So I hope you really enjoy this because he's got a lot of insight into, you know, indie publishing in Australia. Joel Naum is the director of Critical Mass Consulting, which offers publishing strategy, production services, and digital marketing for authors, publishers, and content producers. With more than a decade of experience in books and publishing, Joel set up Momentum, Macmillan's digital imprint, which published more than 100 titles each year and worked with authors across all genres and in both fiction and non-fiction before branching out into his own consultancy. Welcome to the program, Joel.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. All right, so we're going to talk about self or indie publishing, but first of all, can you explain a bit about exactly what Critical Mass does and why you set it up?
So exactly what it does, primarily I work with authors nowadays. I do work with some kind of what the catch-all content producers, which are just businesses who make book-like content and they want to turn it into books. And I have worked a little bit with small publishers as well. But primarily most of my clients are authors looking to self-publish or in a lot of cases not sure if they should self-publish and wanting some advice about it. And the reason I set up the business in the way I did is I was kind of wrapping things up at Momentum, my previous job where I'd been for 5 years, and I was feeling a bit burnt out by the doing the same thing over and over again. And traditional publishers got a lot less excited about ebooks towards the end of my tenure there. And I was still quite excited, but I knew that the most exciting part of the kind of ebook business, digital business, was self-publishing at that point. And it definitely still is. But I did perceive that there was a kind of gap in the market in the sense that there's a lot of services out there for self-publishers, you know, editorial, cover design, and everything else in between. But it's really hard to get a sense of whether or not you're getting ripped off, whether it's a good quality, bad quality service, whether or not you should actually go ahead with it, if your book is actually worthwhile. And to get a kind of sense of whether or not this is a thing you really want to do. Quite a few of my clients also are asking whether or not they should try to traditionally publish first before self-publishing. So I can kind of give some more general advice about where they fit in the whole publishing market.
Great. Okay. So would you put your services, like we hear a lot, well, I've noticed myself because I'm obviously online poking about in the world of writing all the time, but I've seen a rise in this phrase of assisted publishing. Is that where you would put your services?
Sort of. I'm not completely familiar with that phrase. I'm not sure what it entirely entails, but it makes sense for a part of what I do.
Okay.
If one of my clients decides they do want to self-publish, and some of them come to me already having decided, with those clients, I help them self-publish. And that means it's kind of a bespoke process for that's individual to each book and each author, what they want to help with. So I don't have kind of, although I do have packages on my website, that's more to give people a sense of what kinds of things I can do. Mm. What ends up happening most of the time is that clients come to me and say, here's the kind of things that I don't know how to do. Can you help me with these? And I tell them, yes, I can help you with those, and I help them. Okay. What I don't do is take a cut of sales.
Yep.
I don't get involved in the royalties side of things. I just help people set themselves up for self-publishing.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. And why would an author call on you rather than simply doing it themselves? Why do you find they're choosing to come to you? Is it because of the gaps in their knowledge?
Yeah, I think that's the main reason. I think I get a lot of clients who say, I've just been Googling about this and there's this service and this service and this service and I just don't know what to do, you know? So, and I think they're looking for someone to say, okay, this is the right one to go with. This, don't do that, do this. If you're going to do this, don't spend money on that. That's a waste of money. This is what you can actually expect, so don't spend more than what you're willing to spend. And, you know, your genre doesn't really sell that well in self-publishing, so don't expect it to go crazy. You know, it's a kind of just, I guess, yeah, top-level advice about what to expect and also really specific. I can really specifically drill down, project manage the book as well if that's what they need. Okay. And I would say a pretty high percentage of my clients end up after that initial kind of consultation where I walk them through their own project and what they can do with it. They often end up getting some of my services to help with some part of the projects that they feel least confident about.
Okay. All right. So on that, then I guess, you know, given that you do offer this whole range of services from strategy to actually, you know, book production and all of that sort of stuff, when it comes down to actually getting the book going and getting it out there, in which areas do you find that most authors, you know, need you the most? Like, where are they mostly calling on you? Is it marketing? Is it actual production? Is it trying to get a book cover that's, you know, up to scratch? Like, what's the area that they're most kind of, you know, worried about, I guess?
I think the thing they're most worried about is getting the book into a format that makes sense to distribute, and then distribution. Mm. That would be the thing I do for the most number of clients, probably, is help them set up their distribution, because I think it's just ridiculously fiddly and fussy for something that you only do a couple of times in your life if you're a self-publisher. Mm. There's a lot of detail that goes into knowing the best price points, how to set up the metadata, what metadata you need in advance, tax situations, how to get paid, and the most efficient kind of way to set those accounts up. I think a lot of authors are just a bit, and completely understandably, a bit at sea before they've ever done that before. Mm. And most of the self-publishers I know who are successful have kind of accrued that knowledge just hard-won experience, and that's a very time-consuming way to learn. So I think having someone to help set that stuff up for you can be really helpful.
All right, so the impetus for us having this conversation today was a question in our Facebook group, which we have attached to our podcast community. And the question was about self-publishing in Australia, because we see a lot of media around US indie authors, and as you would know, there is an absolute ocean of information out there about self-publishing, some of which seems, you know, I don't know, like it's hard to even work out the quality of the information that you're getting, let alone anything else. And a lot of it seems to be also, there's a big focus on targeting, you know, US authors. But is self-publishing a growth area in Australia?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, ebooks are a smaller market of Australian books in general than it is in the US or the UK. So we are a little bit lagging behind those other countries, and we just have a smaller market. I think one of the benefits of ebooks and self-publishing is that a lot of self-publishers have quite niche genres and audiences, but they expand that to the entire English-speaking world, and that therefore becomes a lot bigger than it would be if they were trying to get a traditional publisher in their own region. And that suits Australians quite well. There are a lot of Australians who are self-publishing, but it's a global market, and it's globally competitive. So I don't think for self-publishing it makes as much sense really to split it up by country, because there's not a huge home movers advantage in the same way as there is in traditional publishing.
Okay. So most of the information that's out there that does seem targeted, you know, directly into that US market is perfectly, you know, usable for Australian authors as well.
Most of the time. I think the key differences are to making sure that you're set up correctly for income and tax. I think there are some fiddly extra bits that you often need if you're setting yourself up for particularly with KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing, the Amazon self-publishing arm, it can be quite expensive to get paid if you're an Australian selling through KDP.
Right.
Just partially because the way that they set themselves up, not to get too technical, is like every single country that has a store sort of reports their sales separately.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of, to get paid, you have to usually get paid by wire transfer, and that can be expensive.
Right.
It costs, you know, $10-15 to get paid. So you want to make sure you're accruing a certain amount of money before you get paid. And in some cases, if it's a really small territory, like you sell some books in Brazil or something, you might only sell a handful of books and then not get paid. So there are some kind of sticky bits in there that Americans just don't need to think about. And there's also some tax implications. You have to fill out tax forms to make sure that the US government doesn't withhold tax from you from being paid from the US.
Right. Okay. And this is all sort of stuff that I guess if you don't get advice, you have to discover for yourself, you know, once you sort of dive down the rabbit hole of all of those millions of websites, you know, aimed at self-publishers. And I guess that's why people find it sort of a bit, well, the implication from the question in the Facebook group seemed to be that, you know, navigating it as an Australian can be more difficult. Would you agree with that?
I think that's the component that people are often talking about.
Yeah, okay.
That because you're approaching it from Australia, then just getting paid and making sure your tax stuff is straightened out, it's not something American self-publishers even really think about. It's not in the kind of guides on how to do it and stuff. Yeah. I think that's the biggest. But other than that, I don't think there's a huge difference really. Okay. I don't, like, from a marketing perspective, from a sales perspective, you can, if your book is global in appeal, there's no reason why an American has an inherent advantage over you selling into the United States.
Okay. And so what kind of books traditionally do well in the indie publishing sphere?
Fiction in particular does well, genre fiction.
Yeah.
Most is the, you know, now primarily genre fiction is, 70% of consumer purchases in genre fiction are now digital.
Right.
So it's a huge change, and a huge percentage of that are self-published authors, okay, self-published books.
So we're talking romance, fantasy.
Romance, fantasy, crime and thrillers.
Right.
Romance is by far the biggest.
Yep.
So that makes it both more competitive and also more lucrative.
Yep.
It's, you have to be better, but you also have to charge less. And publish more. Self-publishing is most suited to authors who are really prolific, who can just churn books out, short, not too long books.
Yeah.
You know, if you get someone who takes 10 years to write a 200,000-word fantasy novel, that's not great. What you want is someone who can come out with 70,000-word novels, you know, a couple a year, really, okay. Ideally.
Okay.
Or serializing a longer novel. There are lots of ways to kind of maximize your publishing,
yep.
But really you need to publish often. One of the biggest tips I can give someone really is that the best thing you can do as a self-publisher to market an existing book is to publish another one,
right.
Because it's just so hard to get people to notice an existing book because there are so many out there. But a new book, it always has potential.
Okay. So given that, and given how competitive it is, and you know, given the price points of it and things like that, how, you know, like let's take romance for example, because it is a massive part of this market. How do you make your romance stand out compared to the next person's? I mean, you know, you could publish 10, but if no one's ever heard of you or your books, how does anyone find them?
Well, I think, oddly, I think self-publishing is pretty old-fashioned in a lot of ways. It is actually largely about communities of interest and connections between human beings.
Okay.
The most successful self-published authors are often the ones who've been around for a long time and have a lot of connections with other authors and their readers.
Right.
And so every book that comes out immediately lights up their whole network.
Right.
That's a really hard thing to just make out of whole cloth with one book.
Yeah.
You in fact cannot do that. So coming out with a single debut author as a self-publisher you just cannot expect the same type of cut-through as you would as an established self-published author.
Okay.
That's true of any kind of publishing, but it's especially true with self-publishing. So really the way to do it is to build it up over time, is to get on social media, talk to other authors, talk to your readers, read other people's books, have those organic connections that people where people value you and are actually I mean, it sounds really old-fashioned, but that's really the way that it happens, I think.
Yeah.
Most of the successes I've ever seen in digital have been with where some kind of completely fortuitous thing happens where a blogger who likes an author picks up their book and reads it, and they have a really specific following for the genre of book it is, and it takes off. That's often the way it ends up happening. It's not enough to be a good writer. You have to be willing to enmesh yourself in the community that you're publishing into, I think.
So it's really it's a long game, isn't it? It's not something that you're going to put out one book and, you know, suddenly you're going to be a millionaire.
Absolutely not. And it's the first question I generally ask my clients is why they're publishing. Mm-hmm. You know, what they want to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people when they really think about it, the reason why they're publishing is for some other reason. It's not to make money. And the clients of mine who say that they are trying to make money, I generally try and dissuade them from doing it at all, because I think honestly, if that's the main driver for doing it, then you're going to be disappointed. You should put your money elsewhere. You know,
okay.
what I say to people is, you should treat publishing books and writing books as a business, but as a very high-risk business.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it?
You should be professional, but you can't expect to get a return on your investment in the same way as you would for something else.
Okay, yeah, I'm hearing you. So why are people presenting themselves to you? Why are they choosing to self-publish? Why are they going down this road? What are the reasons that they're giving you? Let's take the money out of it, but what are some of the reasons that people are choosing to self-publish?
I think the primary reason is that they want some kind of recognition, or they've written a book or they've written a piece of work and they want to find an audience for it.
Okay.
I think that's the prime driver, is that I just want someone to read this. Or sometimes it's just I want to hold the book in my hand and be a published author. There's some kind of status or – and I actually think that's completely acceptable reason to do it. You know, I think that should be the reason you do it. It makes more sense.
It makes more sense than trying to make money.
Yeah, it really
I like
does.
It. Look at us, both of us.
Be realistic
in
about
the industry,
it.
Being realistic.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a money spinner. No one in the publishing industry makes a huge amount of money other than a couple, you know, the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. And one of the things you mentioned is, as part of your sort of publishing services that you offer, is you do talk sort of, you know, top level career stuff. Are you finding that people are they looking at self-publishing as a way to break into traditional publishing? Are some of them thinking that if they self-publish and it's noticed that they'll get a traditional deal out of it? Or are these people who are purely looking to just get their book out there?
A lot of my clients come with that preconceived idea that they could self-publish as a way into traditional publishing.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair strategy in some cases.
Mm.
But I don't think to be specific, I don't think you should try and self-publish a book if you intend for that book to get traditionally published.
Yeah.
If you want a particular book to be traditionally published, then you should try and get it traditionally published. Self-publishing is a terrible way to get a book noticed, partially because it's so hard to get noticed full stop, but especially to get noticed from a traditional publisher who doesn't have to go outside of their, you know, their slush pile in order to find books.
Mm.
Although some of them will monitor bestseller lists, getting on the bestseller list is a task in itself.
Mm.
If you're doing it as a way to traditionally publish your book, then generally speaking, in order to sell enough that you would be noticed, you might have poisoned the well in terms of how many books you could possibly sell for that book.
Mm.
So a traditional publisher looks at that book and says, well, you've sold enough of that book, so I'm not going to take that book. You've just sold it.
Go write another one.
So exactly. And that is the way to, if you're looking to get into traditional publishing via self-publishing, then that's the way to do it, really, is to build a platform. not just books, but also a way of reaching your own readers. That's the kind of thing that, you know, I think a lot of my clients come to me and say, well, people say that I should set up a Facebook page and people say I should set up an e-newsletter, but I've got nothing to say because I don't have any books out. And self-publishing is a way to kind of start building that if you've tried to traditionally publish or you don't want to go down that path yet for whatever reason. You want to get a lot of my clients are like, I just don't want to have to spend the time going door to door trying to get this book published. I just want to start moving with this.
Okay.
And so that's the advantage of one of the advantages of self-publishing is you can just put it out there quite quickly. And then that gives you something to talk about as, you know, as a build in terms of building an author platform. If you don't have a book, it's really hard to to talk about it online.
So I think, though, that anyone who's ever considered indie publishing and starts to research the ins and outs of it finds that there's just, an, as I said, ocean of information, which seems to change quickly depending on what Amazon's doing on any particular day because they seem to be the, you know, the heartland of the whole thing. Do you think that steep learning curve is something that puts authors off?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, I often end up saying to clients, I think book publishing in general is a ridiculously complicated, very low margin industry. So it turns people off. It turns people off. And it should turn people off because I think if you don't want to do it, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do it enough, really, you shouldn't be doing it. And there are enough people out there who are publishing bad books that we don't need more books in there unless you're willing to do the work, really. I think that's what it comes down to. And I don't think it's a bad thing that it turns people off. I think there are a lot of companies out there trying to make it easier, like mine.
Yes. Yay.
So, yeah, there are lots of ways around that. And I think that's great for people who want to do that. But if you really just find the whole idea exhausting, then it probably will be exhausting.
Yeah, that's so true. Can you recommend any trusted sources of information, like to help us sort the week? Like if I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm listening to us, you and me, and we're so fascinating that I'm thinking, wow, you know, maybe the self-publishing thing could be for me. Like if I'm just looking at testing the waters just to see what's involved, where would I be looking for information, do you think?
It's a really interesting question. Mm-hmm. I don't think I really read any blogs or anything that I would say are great for this kind of thing, to be honest. It's kind of information that I've accrued over time.
Yeah.
I think the impetus of a lot of ebook and self-publishing blogs is to keep publishing.
Yes.
They need to keep writing new content, but actually sometimes the advice is a bit perennial. So
right.
You can't really keep writing about that over and over. I've been an ebook blogger myself. So you just keep putting new things out there. And that's part of the confusion for authors because they go, oh, well, I read such and such and they said I should do this and this and such and they said I should do this. And I think a lot of the time it's like, no, get back to basics, get your book out there and try and get people to read it and keep it really, really simple and focus on the things that that more people talk about, I guess, rather than going with the latest new fads. Because I think the latest new fads are often just bloggers spinning the wheels to try and publish more blogs about self-publishing.
Yes, I get that impression sometimes myself. So you're obviously, you know, you're researching the ebook market all the time. Where do you think authors most regularly make mistakes when they're self-publishing? Is it their covers? Is it the lack of editing? Is it like where are they, you know, is it the 200,000 word ebook every 10 years? What are the most kind of regular mistakes that you see?
I think the most, I guess combined with most egregious and most common mistake is when they really rush a book out.
Right.
Like they decide that they're not going to try and traditionally publish, so they're going to self-publish and then they just bang it, you know. They get the fastest possible thing that they can out, and just because you're self-publishing doesn't mean you have to rush. Okay. Traditional publishing is really slow. To be faster than traditional publishing, it doesn't require that much speed. So you still want to make a good book And I think people sometimes just rush into committing to things, and they find solutions online and they don't research it very deeply, and they don't know what they're doing, and so they commit to things that they don't understand, and then run headlong into it and spend a bunch of money, waste a bunch of money, and end up with a terrible book with a terrible cover that doesn't, and then their book is just out there like that. And it's kind of really hard to relaunch a book. I get a lot of clients who have a book already out there that they want to find a way of marketing. And that's, I think, that can be a really disappointing way to talk, like a disappointing consultation.
Yeah.
Where I have to tell them, look, there's not really much you can, put a new cover on it. You can put a new title on it. You relaunch the book. You might have some success in that, but realistically the best way to do it is to buy another book.
Right.
So, be careful, take your time, do your research, and make sure the book is really good.
Okay. When you talk about marketing strategy with people, what are the key points you're talking to, like talking to authors about? Like, what are you, what are the key points to marketing an ebook?
I think the foundational stone for most, particularly when we're talking about fiction and ongoing fiction for authors who are trying to build a platform, is the e-newsletter.
Okay.
Mailing lists are really old. They seem really old-fashioned, but they're a really great way of reaching your core audience, and everything could kind of flow from that. If you don't have a core audience and you're spending all your money just getting people to buy your book really cheap, then you have a kind of shallow penetration and no fans, you know? What you need to do is build that core group of fans who are going to keep coming back to you again and again, and will provide the core of that word of mouth that will get other people reading your books. So I think the newsletter is a great way to do that, because it goes straight into people's inbox, where they will have a much higher chance of seeing it than it is on social media.
Yeah.
And so you own it. So you can't have that. You don't have to pay Facebook for the privilege of talking to your fans. You can reach them directly. That's the, I think that should be the first step for a lot of authors.
And what do you, how, because this is something, again, that comes up regularly in our Facebook group, is this whole business of newsletters. What do you write about? How do you build them? Like, do you give, have you got any sort of just simple tips for authors on where to start if they've got a newsletter, or if they're starting a newsletter?
Sure. To start, if you don't have a book out yet, there's not very much to write about, and you shouldn't feel pressure to write about it.
True. Yeah.
I don't think the newsletter is something that you should be filling with blogs that you found interesting or links to things. And I think you put them out when you need to put them out.
Yeah.
And in terms of the core people that you start inviting to be on that newsletter, it should be friends and family to start with. It should be the people who are your supporters.
Okay.
And then ultimately it will expand to people who you don't know. But then to begin with, it can just be the people you know. Okay. And that's fine. And it needs to start somewhere. And then beyond that, in terms of growing it beyond that, I think the kind of combination of offering a little bit of a book for free or a whole book for free and using a bit of Facebook advertising, that can be a really good strategy for building up a newsletter.
Okay, cool. All right, so let us finish our interview today with your three top tips for authors who might be considering self-publishing.
Three top tips. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to boil down to just three.
I know, but this is your job.
Yeah, I know. But usually I get to talk to them at length about
this. I know, but look at me. All I'm doing is asking the questions. It's up to you. It's all yours now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, one of them, like I said before, would definitely be to take your time. I think people rushing into things is the biggest mistake that they make. And that includes when you talk to me. Don't rush into what I'm offering either. You know, you should take everyone, don't take everyone at face value. There are also a lot of really dodgy outfits out there who are helping people self-publish. If someone's charging you a lot of money, think twice. I think spending the money on the cover is really important.
Yeah.
The cover is ultimately, it's the advertisement for the book. So, it should be as high quality as possible within your budget.
And what sort of budget should you be looking at for a cover? Like, just, off the top of your head,
Yeah, well, like a traditional publisher would spend $2,000 on a cover, easy.
Okay. Yeah.
I think you can spend a lot less than that, but I think it really depends on the genre. I think you can spend upward, you should definitely be spending a few hundred bucks on it.
Okay.
As a minimum, and then upwards of that is fine if you, particularly if you're doing lots of rounds of amendments or that the designer isn't delivering something you want.
Right.
An important concept for covers really is that your cover isn't some, you know, it's not a picture of what's happening in your book. It's an ad for your book.
Yeah.
So it should be communicating the genre and communicating what's interesting and different, as well as what's similar to all the other books that are out there. Okay. So it should be positioning the book in the market. Okay. And I think, yeah, a lot of self-published authors really struggle with that component of it. They have a vision in their head of what they think is a nice cover. And so they put, you know, something on it that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And then people don't know what it's about. Or they try and crowd it out with a bunch of stuff that's in their book. And they say, well, it makes sense because on page 32, you know, my character rides on a panther. So I want a man riding on a panther. And he has eagle wings and he's holding a rose. You know, like that really, really specific, crazy cover that you see. And you just think, well, that's really self-published. That's usually why, is that okay. They've tried to be really specific. I guess the third tip is, yeah, I think investing in editing is really important as well. Okay. I'm an editor, so I guess I would say that. But particularly if you've never been edited before, I think it's really, really important.
And that would be the three levels of editing, like the structural, the copy, the proofreading?
Yeah, I mean, I think the easiest one to dispense with if you're trying to save money is proofreading.
Yeah.
Not because it's not important, but because you can probably crowdsource proofreading with people you know.
Yeah.
Okay. More people who read it, they're going to pick up on errors.
Okay.
Structural editing, you really want to get someone really good.
Yeah.
Because really that's – you can't fix that once it's broken, you know.
Yeah.
You can't fix it after the case.
And is word of mouth the best way to find a really good editor, do you think? Like with other authors?
Yeah, I think talking to other authors and looking in the acknowledgements pages of books that you like, particularly in the same genre, that's a really good way to find editors. People will usually acknowledge their editor. So that's a really good way of doing it.
Because a lot of our best editors actually work freelance, don't they? They work for publishing companies, but they freelance, and so you can actually have them as well if you can fit yourself into their schedule.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of them are very expensive.
Yes. Well, that was my next question. How much do I need to pay for editing?
Yeah. It's kind of how long is a piece of string question. It largely depends on the editor.
Yeah.
If they're really, really top tier, they'll charge a lot. You know, 70, 75 bucks an hour kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it will take, you know, for a normal length, 70, 80,000 word book could cost, for a structural edit, I'm kind of making it up off the top of my head, so I don't want to be too
I'm specific. Loving the fact that you're doing that. But that's excellent.
A few grand for a copy edit and at least a couple of grand for a structural.
Yeah.
Depending on the book and the length and the editor. You know, I think a couple of grand each would be a ballpark figure.
Yeah.
Depending on the length.
You need to budget for it, and $200 is too cheap.
Yeah, if you're getting an edit for $200, it's probably too cheap. Can't get a cheaper one, and it depends on your book. I think copy editing is one of those things that if your weakness is on the line, and a lot of authors it is, then that's where you want to invest.
Yeah.
Whereas if your weakness is... if you're a really, really clean writer, but your weakness is that you waffle on too long, you don't know when to start the story and stop, and you tend to put too many characters in, then really that's when you need to invest in structural editing. And that's a hard, you don't usually know yourself what you need.
Not until you've done it a few times and then you start to realise where your weaknesses really are.
And that's again what a publisher kind of helps provide that top level decision making about your project.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to come to on your own.
All right. But look at spending, you know, some budget on your editor is your basic
thing. Absolutely. And particularly early on, you know, most of the published authors I know, whether they were traditionally published or self-published, they learned a lot from their editor in the early days of publishing. You know, it's kind of what teaches them to be better writers. And you can get away with cutting corners later in your career when you kind of know what an editor will do.
You
start to hear your editor's voice saying, well, this character doesn't make any sense or whatever. And with self-publishing, when you know that there's a certain amount of money that you can possibly make out of it, you know, you're not going to invest thousands and thousands of dollars necessarily into every single book's edit, but you definitely should be spending that money early.
Yeah, yeah, because that's where you learn where you're making mistakes.
Don't cut the corners early.
Very, very good advice. Thank you so much for your time today, Joel. And, of course, if people are interested in having a look at your services, they can go to critmassconsulting.com, and I am going to put that link in the show notes so that you can find it easily. Really, really appreciate your time, and best of luck with your future projects.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
This podcast is brought to you by the Australian Writers Centre, a world leader in writing courses. Our popular 5-week online course in copywriting essentials will teach you how to turn your writing skills into a weapon of mass persuasion. Learn the 7 steps to creating compelling copy, how to take a creative brief, the secrets of SEO, and much more, so you can begin earning good money immediately. Learn online from wherever you are and get your own tutor providing personal feedback on your writing. Find out more at writerscentre.com.au/essentials. How cool. That is awesome. What a good interview. So, you know, insightful.
Yeah, no, look, I think with Joel's experience in, you know, sort of e-books for a traditional publisher and the way that he has such a great overview of the entire industry, I think, yeah, I really enjoyed the interview. I think he had a lot of great tips and some great advice there. So I really hope that it fills the gaps for those people who are asking about that in the podcast community. And remember, like, if you do have a question or some aspect of publishing that you'd really like us to cover, the podcast community on Facebook is a great place to put your questions so that we can actually, like, it's good for us to see what you guys are all talking about and what you're interested in knowing more about. So please let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know. So we're almost at the end of this week's episode. What are you doing in the coming week, Al?
What am I doing? Very good question. Do you know what I'm doing? I'm doing 2 things, Valerie. I'm putting the final touches to that course that I was writing for you that we're not talking about yet. I'm finishing that up. And I am also editing a manuscript. So I've got a lot of kind of, it's the problem solving and rethinking aspect of my life that we'll be focusing on this week. Yeah.
Your manuscript or someone else's manuscript?
My manuscript.
Right. Yes. Mm. Cool. Well, snap, because I am editing a manuscript. I've even got them all this time blocked out in my diary, but it's not my manuscript. It's someone else's manuscript, and it's really good.
Ooh, that's fun. I hope mine's really good when I get to it as well.
I'm sure it is.
I hope I'm going to read it and go, wow, this is really good.
I have no doubt it is.
It's funny. If you leave it long enough, though, sometimes you can read them and be just like, wow, this is really good. I wonder who wrote this.
Awesome, awesome. All right, so thanks for listening, everyone. Where do we find you online, Al?
You will find me at alisontait.com, alisontait.com. You will find me on Twitter at Al Tait, altait. And you will find me on Facebook and Instagram at Alison Tait Writer. And you, Val, where do we find you?
You'll find me at Valerie Koo, that's Khoo, on Twitter and Instagram. And, of course, please do connect with both Alison and I in the podcast community on Facebook. Just search for So You Want to Be a Writer podcast community, and we'd love to see you in there. Awesome people in there. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we look forward to chatting to you again next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to So You Want to Be a Writer. You'll find the show notes at writerscentre.com.au/podcast, or sign up for our awesome and often hilarious weekly newsletter at writerscentre.com.au/news, where you'll find writing resources, giveaways, competitions, and much more.